Blog Talk Radio.
No one thought we would be here. No one gave us a chance. We surprised everyone but ourselves. Everyone who did not see us work, everyone who did not see us come together, we earned their respect. But our goal is much bigger. We have fought hard together to win this round. And we have earned the right to continue to fight. But we want more. We need more. Four more rounds. And we must land the knockout punch in every round. We know this journey will not be easy. This is the playoffs. Everything is elevated. The energy, the speed, the intensity. Today, we must all match that intensity. So stand up, get loud, and help our boys finish the fight.
You're listening to the Sports Narrative Radio Show, live from Fort Worth, Dallas, Texas, featuring Dustin Company.
You guys want my answer, or do you want your smart-ass response
yes,
to my
answer? I'd love to hear
Jeff Feltman.
I'm going to try and keep this whole thing nice and calm across the board.
And me, the Mick. I'll form the head.
I don't know what he did. Probably something naughty in the shower. Dirty blondes screaming out the N-word.
And now your host, Jeff Bauer.
That is an epic fail. Pantera in the background, by the way, is so much better than what the Cowboys roll out when they put out Motley Crue after the Michael Irvin video. So, yes, let's have a little bit of... A little bit of Pantera there never hurts anybody. So welcome to the Sports Nerd Radio Show for a mighty cold Wednesday evening here in 2015 as we kick off the year with a little bit of coldness. I'm going to maybe light a fire in my beautiful studios here and just, you know, set the desk on fire, something to keep warm. It's going to be a good time, so. In the meantime, I believe that was a regonk there from almost Mr. Kopening.
No, not quite a regonk, just a...
Not quite.
It's guttural good sound of some sort. But
that's good. The first sound that you make in the year of 2015, a good... All right, well, we have got a jam-packed show for you today, and it should be a lot of fun, so I hope you will tune in for the entire 2 hours. We're going to start off, of course, talking about the NFL weekend that was. We will kick off with some Cowboys talk, and we will try to keep Mr. Kopening's pom-poms out of our faces for a whole segment.
It
may be difficult. Yeah, exactly. It may be very difficult. After that, we will talk about the rest of the games that happened in Wild Card Weekend and look ahead to the divisional round, easily the best weekend of the football year. So excited for it, so we will get you all prepped up for that. Then we'll also talk about the little bit of college football action as we have the championship game on deck here in the mighty North Texas. Yeah, shut
you
up, Nick.
Deck.
yes.
No,
as,
South Carolina is not involved.
No, okay. No, they are not. They are not. But... mixed teams, of course, every time I let Mick pick a game, it never works out well for me, so awesome. Why does that – okay, do you guys also see this? Why does it say I have 8 minutes left in this show?
You're fine. Don't worry about it.
No.
You're good.
I'll see that too. Mine says 10.
I see it. I doubt you scheduled a 15-minute show.
I sure really hope I didn't. I might have, otherwise –
If you did, we'll find out here in about 10 minutes
you
and
know
15
what?
Seconds.
That's exactly what it says, 15 minutes. That is awesome.
Okay,
awesome.
Now, I will recommend, here's what you need to do. We need to end the episode so that it doesn't give you the whole
this morning.
Yeah, you're going to have to end the episode, and then we'll have to reboot here.
No, if
you
we'll have to start tomorrow.
No, no, as long as you, as long as you, I don't know, man.
Yeah,
you're going to have to.
Experience not great, so.
No, it worked before.
No, here's what's going to happen, folks, is that no one's going to hear this lovely show but us. So, there you go. Yeah, it's going to be great.
In 9.5 minutes, I can start cussing.
Pretty much. That's how it's going to work. Well, we'll just...
no one's listening live to this thing anyway.
It's true. So, if any of you fall off, then we're all going to die. So, it's not true. We actually do have some live listeners, but...
Well,
yeah, apparently I
pity you for
one wrong
poor
button.
Fools.
One wrong button will kill the whole thing. Awesome. Well, that's great. Well, we'll do 2 hours. Hell, we'll do 12 hours. Who knows? We'll just keep going all night long. It doesn't matter. all right.
All night.
College football after that. Then we wander into Mick's pub, where Mick is very, very excited for the debut of what he will be watching on Monday night, not the college football championship game, and so much more. And then we will talk a little bit of the greatness of Dirk, the wonder that is the Baseball Hall of Fame, the stars that are managing to win, and basically how Dallas has become the city of champions in the last month or so. So that should be a lot of fun. But first, let's bring on some other people.
Playing.
Well, that's exactly right. So, but yes, for the next 5 minutes of live show, let's bring on some other people here. And for that, I need a mic check.
What?
My mic sound nice. Check one.
We're doing this quick. We only got 7 minutes.
No, go ahead. It's fine. Keep it going. No, we're good.
Right now. Sorry, Pastor King. Feet already dropped.
Well, we could still play. I mean, the music will pop back up, but it's fine.
Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe when our first soundbite ends after the time's over, we may kick us off the air, but we'll see.
We'll find
then
out.
We'll test my theory.
Well, we can't. Like I said, I scheduled it this morning, so we can't schedule another one today.
You can, but I've done it before. You just have to do it the right way. Just
I've also seen the
We'll keep
fail.
Our fingers crossed.
Dustin Blog Talk fail has been on display a few times, so we'll see how we go there. All right, gentlemen. Well, you have heard the rest of the crew thus far. We are, of course, joined by the man who does wrestle with Blog Talk more than any other human being, I think, ever, Mr. Dustin Copeland.
I hate this stupid site. I mean, we love you, Blog Talk. We pay you every month, so yeah, screw yourself, you stupid thing. Although I don't know if you really blame Blog Talk on this one, Mr. Bowers.
Well, should be going away soon. No, obviously not. I hit one wrong
it
button.
Happens.
And yeah, exactly. It's right. It's fact-checking. It's details, kids. Learn to get your details right. All right, well, of course, the other man on this show, the one, the only, the infamous, the Mick.
I'm not playing. I'm going to start cussing as soon as we're off the air.
No, because this still does go to iTunes, so I would prefer not to have to write Apple a letter. Sorry about the thing.
Wait, is it like seventh grade, you have to write a letter to the teacher?
Yeah, exactly.
And you have to have that like already made, like you're going to need a lot of those, a whole lot.
Yeah, I know. Just
Dear Ghost of Steve Jobs.
Yes, I'm so sorry.
Once we get cameras going... My penis may be on there.
Good.
Oh my God.
Well, that'll be a YouTube sensation. We really will be famous very soon.
That's how it works.
Mr. Copening, since you did mention deceased Steve Jobs, that is actually what I wanted to talk about here in the mic check, and that is some recent deaths here in the world of sports, as we will go in chronological order. The most, perhaps most sad, but also not surprising, as Mick has a plane flyover.
Mm-hmm.
One Stuart
the ashes
Scott.
Of, yeah, Stuart Scott's ashes. They're being dropped on the Metroplex.
Drop what an odd request for Stuart Scott's final remains.
Yes.
He would drop him over
Mr. Coker,
a random Air Force base in Texas.
Yes.
It seems as though Stuart Scott was a polarizing figure amongst our generation. And I would love to get your thoughts on the great Stu Scott and his legacy as on ESPN.
Man, I went back and forth with Stuart Scott, but I'll tell you what didn't really dawn on me until looking at the outpouring of response after his death was the way that he really blazed a trail for those who felt that they didn't have a voice in sports media. And those would be the people in the hip hop community, I guess you would say. And that's what he got a lot of criticism for people for, you know, I think some people would say he was somehow false in the way he was, regardless of I think those people really don't know Stuart Scott as an individual, and those who did know him spoke incredibly glowingly about him. So it's a very sad moment. It's not a moment that took me by surprise, especially when you go back and listen to his ESPYs speech that he gave when he got the Jimmy V Award not too long ago, only a few months back. And the last thing that he said was, have a great life. And I heard that. I remember hearing that in the speech and a little, bell going off my head and saying, he's terminal. He knows this is the last time he's going to be reaching this audience, that Stuart Scott is not going to be with us for much longer. And I find the man incredibly inspiring. And like I said, it didn't dawn on me how many people he reached and the path that he created for many people until really seeing the outpouring after his death.
Yeah. And, I have to say I was a fan of his because, I felt like, it's kind of like the second generation of SNL characters. I heard someone make this reference, because you had the original guys, the original SportsCenter guys, the guys of our ilk, which was the Dan Patrick, Keith Olbermann. And I think
Olbermann
just like every,
yep.
I think the just like with every generation, you think that the guys that you grew up with are the best, people who remember the original SNL cast say they're the best. But if you watch it now, mm-hmm. if you set it in front of a 21-year-old kid and you said, here, watch the Coneheads or watch this guy, with a shark jump out of a closet, they would look at you like you were insane.
That was a funny bet. That was a funny bet.
Candygram. I know, right? however...
Or how about Toons is the Cat?
Yeah.
How good does Toons is the Cat go over?
Yeah, so it's I think it's something that it's generational. And I feel like, he was the transition from the Olbermann-Patrick days to the, Kenny Maynes, Rich Eisens, those guys. And I felt like I liked it because they kept the bits going. They did new bits. They did their own thing. But they kept the bits going. And I respected the crap out of him. I thought he was good. Now, I think it turned into, for me, kind of the same way I felt about Ahmad Rashad, where he was embraced by the community, in fact, so much that it became, I felt, tough for him to do his job, Because, if you're friends with somebody, you don't want to go out there and be ripping a guy. And, I think I felt like he got too close. And that's when I lost, it's cool, whatever.
I hear what you're saying. You're basically saying you felt he was a little bit too much of a friend of the athlete.
Right. It's one of the things in this business. It's probably one of the toughest things to do. And it's, when you actually get connected and, get to know these guys, it's like with Tony Romo. I can, stand at a distance and, critique Romo or praise Romo, and it's fine. Or Jerry Jones. There's a better example. I can stand at a distance and critique Jerry Jones, but I might, go out and have beers with him and have a great time and get on the Cowboys party bus, and then I'll come back and say, he's not that bad.
Let's pick up that flag.
Yeah.
More to come.
More on that later.
Oh,
yeah, exactly.
Man.
So much more to come. But that's one of the things. And, by the way, we've left our live audience.
Gone
so,
off live.
Yep.
The great experiment begins.
Nick, don't cuss.
No. Damn it.
I know. Sorry. There you go. There's the extent of your cussing. All right. But I have to say, I respected what he did. I think you're right. He did blaze a trail for African Americans in sports casting and in bringing in that that element. I love that. And for that,
it's it really isn't even. You break it down to African American in the hip hop community. It was anyone who wants to not be the stereotypical reporter guy on TV. I mean, definitely so. And it's something, that really ESPN did. And, looking at it, I think a lot of the criticism that comes with Stuart Scott is when you had the big black backlash with ESPN in general.
Yeah.
I know. Unfortunate slip of the tongue. But the backlash with ESPN, because it's about the same time as you started to, get that kickback, at the same time when everyone said, well, ESPN has turned into a bit now, and they've got playmakers with that whole thing that came out. And the horrible, what was it, the Dale Earnhardt movie? I just want to raise daddy. I mean, that was all the Stuart Scott era, and it may have been something that kind of tarnishes our view of Stuart Scott and what he brought to the air. Although, I think we've all admit the guy was pretty impactful and was a talent. And it just sounds like a heck of a dude, man. Go back and watch Hannah Storm if you haven't seen it. Breaking the news to the world that Stuart Scott had died, and just again, if you don't come near tears or fear, feel some sort of emotion, man, you don't have a soul. Or tears to fears.
Yes.
Or machine head.
Yeah. Man, you just cannot talk tonight, can you, Dustin?
No, it's not just tonight. You know this, Nick.
It's always. Yeah, it's always.
Yeah.
Well, I do have to say, though, the one thing I find, just like with Berman, the bits eventually get tired. You can only do something so long. And that was his thing, and so I get it. I get that it can wear, but it's fine. I thought he was a good dude, and I thought he lived a courageous life. He had the eye cancer. He gets the fake eye. He was wearing the glasses to kind of cover it up because it was kind of uncomfortable on TV. Still kept going. So anybody who faces down the big C and does so gracefully, I will totally give credit to, because that is not easy. So, a shout out there, a big stay hard to Stuart Scott. And then, of course, the other passing that we had today, at the age of 70, Cowboys defensive tackle Jethro Pugh, a member of the Doomsday defense, a man that Mr. Copening was not familiar with.
Who did what,
today. Yeah,
I wasn't, and I am. I'm a bit ashamed to admit it. Even though he was a few generations before my time of Cowboys fandom, going back and reading the history of Mr. Jethro Pugh, I was like, yeah, probably should have known who this was.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you should.
It's fine.
Uh-huh.
Sorry, I'm trying to alert our public.
We're scrambling.
We really are scrambling. This whole thing's just been screwed up. It's everything in Dallas is about championships except for this show. So, anyway, but yes, the greatness of Jethro Pugh, a guy who I think deserves to be, he's a guy that's been up for the Hall of Fame in the past. Maybe he gets in, by a veterans committee type of deal. A guy who... like I said, I would have lost the bet, Mr. Copening, if you told me he wasn't in the Ring of Honor, because I just thought he was.
No. Played long enough as a Cowboy. It was 14 years, I want to say, 12 years as a starter. Pretty impressive, man.
Actually,
Good run.
I actually got to meet once with a at a Norm function, and that was pretty cool. But yeah, it was, you know, anytime you get a member of the Doomsday defense along that line with Bob Lilly and, you know, all those guys, is pretty impressive. So, yeah. So, yes, a big shout-out to Jethro Pugh as well and to his family and all of those things. So, with that being said, let's get us ready for a little bit of Cowboys talk, Mr. Kopening, and I will let you go crazy as I have a special treat for you with this intro music here on the Not Live Sports Narrative Radio Show.
I want it all. I know what it takes to get the best, and I want people who can deliver it. I've tasted greatness, and I'm hungry for it again.
Ah, yes. Little Jerry Jones there, bringing you in with some I Want It All. And, yeah, Mick, you can just leave that down there, right there where it is. Yes, Jerry does want it all. He wants Chris Christie. He wants it all, really. And
he wants the glory hole.
Yes, and he wants some glory hole. He wants everything. And right now, he's getting it as his Dallas Cowboys beat the Detroit Lions 24-20. And, Mr. Kopening, I thought we would go through this game by basically walking through it in sequential order, and then we will get to our big comments as after we get all the way to the end. If you are down with that, I will yield the floor
to you. That's great. Yeah, well, the game got off to a rip-roaring success and start as the Cowboys went 3-and-out on their first drive. not exactly a great success. However, boy, was there ever a moment when you look back in the backfield and who's returning kicks but the one, the oldie, Golden Tate, who Barry Church, for some reason, thought it was a smart idea to call out before the game. And he goes and he fields the punt, and C.J. Spillman pops him for a stops him after a two-yard game, absolutely levels him. And then 3 plays later, he goes for a 56-yard touchdown pass, 51-yard touchdown completion.
Oh, by the way, Barry Church missing the tackle on that play. Touchdown. So yeah, that was rough. That was prior to the game. Church talking the noise. Golden Tate saying, "Who is that again?" So
that was a great response though by Golden Tate saying, "I don't even think I've ever heard of Barry Church before." Okay, but funny. But yeah, you probably know who would be defending you as the safety. The Cowboys then have another rip-roaring, amazing possession as they go. They get a first down, but then have to punt the ball, and it looks like Chris Jones shanks the thing, but it takes a Cowboys bounce and rolls all the way down to the quarter-yard line, and then there's an unnecessary roughness penalty that moves it half the distance to the goal. So, massive penalty. And the Cowboys then, they stuff the Lions. It's 4th-and-5, punting out of the end zone. And a guy who, it's funny, Mr. Bowers, I was doing research for the pregame show, and Dakota Watson was on the injured report. And I remember thinking to myself, who the F is Dakota Watson? Well, we were introduced to Dakota Watson as he runs into the punter. It's a 5-yard penalty running into the punter, gives the Lions a first down. And they just go and drive the ball all 99 yards, ending in a Reggie Bush 18-yard touchdown run. And at this point in time, as you can imagine, I was a little concerned.
Yes. Okay, so let me stop you right there, because at this point in the game, what you've seen, and even on the Cowboys' possessions, the quick 3-and-outs, you've seen a lot of things just not go their way. It just felt like it wasn't their day. Like, it would be, there was, I'm trying to remember exactly specifically, but there was a drop, there was, you know, it was, Romo was under duress, which we'll talk more about that in a minute.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, the Dakota Watson penalty, and it just, you know, the bad angle, Golden Tate breaking the touchdown, and it felt like, and it's something that we talked about here weeks before, about how, you know, I felt like the Cowboys had gotten every break, and it seemed like over this last month, every play that could be made was made. And that kind of luck just doesn't last. And I felt like this was karma. This was coming back to it. In fact, I sent it out on Twitter many times at Sports Narrative, saying this is football karma. This is all coming back around. You had this. You had injuries in the game now as Rolando McClain went out.
Rolando McClain, yeah.
And now it was just – I was
Tyrone
just felt
Crawford
like, okay,
is on the sideline throwing up his lobster lunch. I mean, it did not look good.
It all was just going in the wrong direction for the Cowboys, and I thought, okay, this is what it is. Now, let me also say, I still knew these were the Detroit Lions, and I'd seen this play happen before. So, all right, let's keep going.
Yeah, so both teams exchanged some pretty uneventful possessions. The Dallas Cowboys get the ball back, and with 2:15 on the clock, they start a drive. And it looked like, again, things were going horribly wrong as one of the first controversial calls of the day was made, in which on a 3rd-and-2, a pass is completed to Jason Witten for a first down, but the referees call an offensive interference call when Terrence Williams gets pushed into the Lions defender,
yeah.
And they say that was a pick. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Fortunately for the Cowboys, on the very following play, that same Terrence Williams breaks a blitz as Romo finds him over the middle, goes 76 yards for a touchdown. It's game on, 14-7, and you're feeling great. And then all the Cowboys do is allow the Lions to kick a field goal with 1:37 left on the clock.
All right, let me say this. Going into this game, clearly the Cowboys' defense came out saying, all right, we've got to get pressure on Stafford. We can't let him stand back there and throw. So they were dialing up blitzes, and these blitzes were getting them killed. Every big pass play the Lions had where it was against a blitz, I mean every one of them, and they were just getting destroyed. They were getting no pressure. It was really bad, and to the point where I was saying, why, what are you doing? Stop blitzing. Look, Stafford will throw you the ball. Just drop into coverage. Okay.
Would you like to know, Mr. Bowers, how many blitzes were run in that first half?
Yes, I'd love that.
There were three. Would you like to know how many blitzes were run in the second half?
Yes.
None?
Zero. The Cowboys blitzed three times. Mick gets the point. The Cowboys blitzed three times during the first half, and they completed three. The Lions burned them on three times as Stafford was 3 for 3 on the blitz. And then the Cowboys said, yeah, we're not going to do that anymore.
Yeah, I can only imagine. All right, so, yeah, that it seemed like way more than three. I guess that's the number, but,
Number.
So, okay, so then on the other hand, the Lions were blitzing to perfection.
Yeah, they were.
I mean, there were plays in the first half of this game where literally two guys are coming free. Like, I get one. I get you scheme a defense to get one guy to come free, and, you know. But, I mean, there were times where there were two and three guys untouched through this line, and it was amazing. And you thought, Mr. Kopening, you had to have thought, Romo's not going to survive this game.
Oh, there was definitely the moment where you're thinking, I forget the exact play, but, you know, the safety comes unguarded up the middle. And there was a great visual where you saw after this play unraveled, in which Romo gets leveled by the safety, on the replay you saw the visual from, you know, Romo's back looking forward, and you see Joseph Randle in protection, and he goes right. They're all just trying to block up Nnamdi Kamara, whatever his name is, Sue.
And
they totally let the safety just come through unblocked on the left side. And, it was quite demoralizing.
Yes, I would definitely say so. So, it was amazing to me. And yet, as you said, the Cowboys get the score with Terrence Williams. It seems to work out very well for them. And now all of a sudden, you know, they're back in this game. And then you're right. The Lions drive the field. They get the field goal right before the half. They're going to get the ball at the second half. It's 17-17.
But, oh, wait, it's great.
Think,
Everything's great because Mr. Bowers, first play out of the half, Matthew Stafford drops back. His pass is deflected by Jeremy Mincy. The pass is intercepted by Kyle Wilbur. The Cowboys have the ball at the Detroit 19, and then eventually Tony Romo takes a sack on second and five, on third and one.
On another ridiculous blitz.
Oh my God. And then it's okay. Dan Bailey's going to get him within seven. No, he misses the 41-yard field goal. And then Detroit gets the ball and kicks a field goal, and they're up 20-7. And that was the moment, Mr. Bowers, where I really started to believe this was not going to be the Cowboys' afternoon/evening.
And once again, it was a bad break. The one guy you wouldn't expect to miss a field goal is Bailey. The one guy you would is Prater. And yet, you know, he nails his without any problems right before half. Bailey comes out and misses. And, yeah, you're thinking, oh, man, this thing is over. But as I told you, this is the Lions. This is what the Lions had done all year. They would have a couple of great drives. They would get, you know, 14, 10, 17 points. And then for the middle of the game, they would just forget how to play football and then rally back at the end for the big win on the games that they won. And that was their season. And as we saw, that started to play out.
Yes, as the 3 points that Detroit added to make the score 20-7 would indeed be the final 3 points they would score on the evening, as Dallas then gets the ball down 20-7, and they drive all the way down, get to the Lions' one-yard line, and on fourth and one, DeMarco Murray runs it to the left, gets into the end zone. It's 20-14, and the game was on at that point in time. The Lions then fail to get anything going on their next possession, and the Cowboys then, as we have a phone ringing in the background, the Cowboys then get the ball. They put a field goal up on the board. It's 20-17, and then all hell breaks loose as the Lions drive down, and with 8:25 to go in the game, up by three, Matthew Stafford third and one, attempts a pass to Mr. Pettigrew, the tight end. The Cowboys look like they are being flagged for pass interference as Anthony Hitchens is caught. And then apparently it wasn't a foul as the officials announce the penalty, which you're just the Cowboys fan, you're just sitting there going, oh my God. And then I'm sitting here, I'm watching the game, and I'm just a head in hands, and I'm just like, man, here we go. Here comes a touchdown or a field goal. They're not going to have a chance. And then I hear the crowd cheering wildly, and I look up, and you know, Joe Buck doesn't know what the hell is going on. He's like, I guess they picked up the flag, and the football world lost its mind.
Yes, Twitter broke at that moment. Yes. All right, so, by the way, we are joined by the great Jeff Feltman. How are you doing, sir?
Hey.
I'm doing well. Forgive me. I'm on mobile right now. I'm very mobile. I'm in at Arby's. I'm about to get a snack because I haven't eaten all day except the banana. Had a very busy day at the Felton household, but I'm here with you guys till the end.
Excellent. Thank you, sir. So glad to have you there. All right. You can mute out the Arby's sound. All right, gentlemen. Let me begin by playing a little bit of this.
Oh, God.
Let me just say that prior to this game, how many times do we hear about like who the refereeing crew is? How many times do we specifically hear Joe Buck go out and say, by the way, this is a crew that's never worked together before, and you know, it's not an all-star crew. Don't make any mistakes. Mm-hmm. Not an all-star crew. These are a bunch of guys that have never worked together. I'm just throwing that out there. When have you ever heard that?
Apparently, that's a part of our new playoff rules, that you get random rest.
Oh.
All right, if you don't mind, if you guys can hear me, okay, I've got a little bit of information on that. This is a new development, and what they're doing is the bottom 30% of the refs are out. The top 70% are in this playoff. And then as it gets closer and closer, it's then the top 50, 30, 10, or whatever percent. A lot of the old referees are very unhappy with this situation because these guys haven't ever worked together before. Nobody on the crew knows each other. This is their first game. I think the NFL screwed the pooch royally on this.
And, oh, by the way, do you know who you have to thank for this lovely development? That would be the Commissioner Roger Goodell, because all of this came out of the referee strike of a couple years ago. Let's just all remember those lovely days. So
I love the replacement refs. I want to be a replacement ref.
They just about were. All right, so regardless, on this particular play, we have heard, of course, from immediately the Jerry joke series broke out about Dean Blandino and riding on the bus and all of these things and calling in favors, which I, of course, participated in because I love that. However, let me also say that when the play happened, it was one of those pass interference calls that I hate, that if it were against my team, I would be mad that it got called. But I'd just grown so accustomed to it based on everything that's happened this year that you just kind of go, fine, whatever, it is what it is. Now, of course, the NFL came out and said that, no, it should have been actually defensive holding and not the pass interference. Wouldn't have made a difference. The Lions would have gotten a first down.
Let's get into that after we complete the game talk here, because I got a whole another thing about this whole garbage that the NFL's gone through the last 72 hours.
All right. So then, yeah, and so yes, the flag was picked up. There's more on that. We'll talk about that more in a minute. However, what it does end up doing is now from this point on, that changed the game for me. And I'll tell you why when you give me the next play.
Fourth and one. The Lions line up to go for it, but they don't go for it. Instead, they try and draw the Cowboys offside. They take a delay of game penalty. 5-yard penalty moves the ball back, and then, the poor Detroit punter, Mr. Martin, shanks it off his foot. It goes 10 yards, and the Dallas Cowboys have the ball at their own 41 with 8:10 to go and trailing by just 3 points.
All right. This was the difference in the game to me, and it wasn't the shank by itself. So up until this point, and there was another point later in the game, the Lions had been one of the teams that had gone for, they were in the top five of going for it on fourth downs during the season. Jim Caldwell has always been a guy who feels like he could get the first down. He's not Chip Kelly crazy, but he goes for it. Meanwhile, your coach, Mr. Garrett, is one of the least likely to go for it on fourth down based on the season. And on those numbers and on those trends, that is the reason that I picked the way that I did and picked the Lions to win the game by 1 point. Now, if you had told me that, oh, by the way, these two coaches are going to switch brains midway through this game and it's going to cause the punter to shank a punt 10 yards because they traded brains at halftime, okay. maybe I would have picked a different way. But
and
to me, that
as
was
you're
the
alluding
biggest
to,
thing.
On yes, that sir. Cowboys drive, we get the definitive moment of Garrett's career. It's certainly the Cowboys season, but I think this is the moment of Jason Garrett's career. And regardless of from where this run goes from and where things go from here, this may be the moment you look back on and say, this is where Jason Garrett cemented himself as a solid NFL coach, maybe legendary, maybe transcendent, as the Cowboys
on
fourth and six on the next drive.
Damn, tap the brakes. I'm going to demand that you slam on the brakes.
Let me finish. As
you've
on fourth and six,
on your nose.
The Cowboys are at the Detroit 42-yard line. They go for it. Tony Romo finds Jason Witten over the middle. And if you haven't heard the exchange between Brad Sham and Babe Laufenberg and the call on this play. Man, go back and find it. You can go to 105.3 The Fan. I think it's Sham Goes Ham is the Ben and Skin segment. It's amazing as they're both saying, how can you go for this? Oh, my God, don't do it, Jason. And then the pass is completed, and they're both saying, and Sham says, "Don't." Well, that was a saying all along. Go for it. Great call. Very tongue-in-cheek.
Awesome. By the way,
thanks to a hold on Sue that wasn't called.
Yes, there was the hold on Indominus Sue.
We'll get into that.
In addition, there was the hold on Jason Witten.
No. Let's. I said all right. Bowers. Let's get into that. Let's finish the game, and we'll get into that BS.
All right.
That bull crap. That bull spit. As I'm very, very. Oof, I'm ready to
all
roll,
right.
Man. So the Cowboys
get down.
They get to the Detroit 3-yard line. It's 3rd and 3. You get a false start that moves them back another 5 yards. And again, you're thinking, man, here's the same old Cowboys. But no, on 3rd and 8, Tony Romo finds Terrence Williams streaking into the end zone. A beautiful route run by him as he breaks off his route,
naked?
Realizing that the defender had overrun the coverage.
Completely.
Touchback. Romo finds him. And
well, you'll
the Cowboys are up.
Take your helmet off.
24-20.
Yes. A great play by Romo. He takes the shot. Of course, the iconic image of him on the ground, slapping the ground in joy after absolutely taking a beating throughout most of the game, actually. But then, on that play, great play. I totally give you credit. And it's, like I said, with the Lions, it's exactly what I expected. Now it's time for the Lions to rally and see if they could beat a good team, which is something they've haven't done in 2 years.
So the Lions get the ball
with
2:32 to go. They get the ball at their 20, 1st and 10, and then they get a 6-yard play, 2nd and 4. Matt Stafford is stripped of the ball. The ball bounces forward. It's scooped up by DeMarcus Lawrence at the Detroit 24. And he tries to advance the ball forward. He gets stripped. The Lions fall on it. They recover. It's a change of possession, so it's a fresh set of downs at the 2-minute warning at the Detroit 23. And it's another one of those moments where, oh, well, this is what the Cowboys are going to do. They're going to go Cowboys all over themselves one more time. But no,
so,
Mr. Bowers,
so almost,
that's not
Leon
where it ended. And Leon Lett actually had a role in this. Is DeMarcus Lawrence, the coaching staff, could have decided to pull him, but Leon Lett is one of the defensive line coaches, or the defensive line coach. And, they keep DeMarcus Lawrence in, and several plays later on 4th and 3, he sacks Matt Stafford. The ball comes loose. DeMarcus Lawrence falls on it, holds on to it, and the Dallas Cowboys have the ball with 54 seconds to go, and they would go on as the Landry shift is in effect. Kneel down, kneel down. Game over. Dallas Cowboys win their wild card playoff game against the Detroit Lions.
All right. So quickly as we get to this point, I had 3 cheers in this game for various elements. And the 3 cheers I had, first of all, the Cowboys in the second half. To me, it's been a long time since the Cowboys were the team who clearly went in with a bad game plan and absolutely made the changes that they needed to make. You know, they went in trying to blitz on defense, which was a terrible idea. They go out and they make changes in the second half. They drop into coverage, getting only rushing 4 and getting pressure with 4. Which I thought they could have done all game. By the way, I'm still waiting for that apology on DeMarcus Lawrence's draft selection last year.
Don't hold your breath.
Well, yeah, no kidding. I think that's he's only going to get better. I thought a great play by him. The redemption's there. The Cowboys in the second half, the coaching staff did a fantastic job. To the second point, cheer number 2, Garrett with some cojones. You called it, Mr. Kopening, that Garrett absolutely threw it on the table and said, let's see who's bigger. And he did it, and it worked. Calls be damned. And I thought that was great.
I'm right there with you. I would never have expected that, although I was not yelling, don't go for it at the time. I thought it was the right move to go for it. I, however, was definitely taken aback a bit that Jason Garrett was actually going for it, as you have not seen this before. As a matter of fact, I heard on the Ticket Bad Radio the other day, they were breaking down, and Jason Garrett, in meaningful moments, has never gone for anything beyond fourth and five. It's the only time he's gone beyond it has been, you know, one of those late game situations where it's the last possession, you're down by 10 points, you just have to go for it.
Right. And then so big cheer there. And the last cheer I have was for the crowd. Dude, the crowd made a difference in this game. The crowd absolutely, made a huge difference. They affected the Lions. We saw that. Obviously, they may have affected the refs. More on that in 1 second. But, absolutely. The crowd was fantastic. They were on it. And, yes, Mr. Feldman, I'm happy to take any callers you would like.
And
yes,
man,
I just answered the opposite.
It reinforces why people don't like Cowboy fans. They only showed up during the playoffs.
That's not exactly true. The last several home games were pretty loud.
I've kept my tongue quiet for the last few minutes here while I've been stuffing my face with a roast beef and cheddar sandwich here at Arby's. And I have to say something about this Cowboys team, because I have probably been the biggest Cowboy hater on this show, without question. And I have to say,
that's debatable.
Well, you only hear part of it. I cuss you out all the time, especially when we do the pregame show. But anyway, I have to say something. First and foremost, Dallas has already accomplished more than everybody thought they would. And all of this crap about Jason Garrett possibly could lose his job if they don't. That man has finally, they finally got it set up right. They got him as a walk-around coach. They got his people in there. If this team, let's just think about this. They beat the Detroit Lions, who were one of the best defensive teams in the league. Now we're going to have to go to Green Bay. I don't want to get too far ahead here, but I think we've got to give some credit to the Cowboys. If they go to Green Bay, even with Aaron Rodgers partially injured, and they win that game, they're going to have to go to Seattle and then New England. Guys, if they run this table, this could be the single greatest championship run in the history of our lifetime.
Yeah.
And I think they could actually do it. New England scares the hell out of me more than any of those, because if Aaron Rodgers hurt, they've got a shot.
Well,
even in Lambeau.
All right, Cap.
But let's give the Cowboys some credit, is all I'm saying, because this team, they finally put one together that made sense and that worked, and I think we should show them a little love.
Now, that I agree with, and that's what I'm trying to do here. And that's one of the things.
And
that,
I think, is a perfect segue, though, Mr. Bowers, into penalty talk.
Yes, agreed. Yeah, and that actually goes under my three jeers. One was the Dallas blitz scheme. Oh my God. Two was the Caldwell not going on fourth down. What the hell are you doing? It's a playoff game. And finally, the refs. Mr. Copenhagen, I will let you go first if you'd like.
Let me start off by saying, Detroit fans, I feel you, man. I walked home from the bar several years ago as I watched the Dallas Mavericks lose in the NBA Finals to the Miami Heat, Game 5, several horrible officiating calls, Game 6, more horrible officiating calls. And I'll tell you this, for the next few years, I was pretty much convinced that the Dallas Mavericks got jobbed out of a championship. And it was only a few years later when the Dallas Mavericks reached – let me finish.
Picture you walking home from the bar, heels in hand, smeared lipstick, Mavericks
jersey on. I just about drove off the road. I'm not kidding. I did. Oh, my God.
And Mr. Feldman, you were there that night. You remember exactly how that evening unfolded. There was no smeared
lipstick. I carried your heels for you.
No, actually, you didn't.
No, you didn't. As I was ready to leave and no one else was, oh, no, it's fine. We're going to hang out. I'm like, I'm going home and I'm taking a month-long sleep. And I'll say this. I was convinced for several years that the Mavericks got jobbed, but it was only when I saw a real championship team go on a drive and get to the finals and win it when it dawned on me that, you know, the Mavericks didn't lose that finals because of anything the officials did. They lost that finals because they weren't good at it. The coach who made all the wrong calls. They had a team that got rattled when things got tough. And I'm sorry, Detroit,
But the Lions didn't lose the game because of a bad officiating call. They didn't lose the game because of a apparent hold that happened on that 4th and 6 play. They lost the game because they weren't good enough.
Okay. I agree with you there. One of the things that I find beautiful about sports in general is the fact that, you know, as you said, I think things level themselves out. I don't really feel like somebody gets absolutely hosed on things. Things suck, but if it's that close, if you're within one play of winning or losing a game and it just goes your way, then you didn't do enough to win the game outright. So I'm with you there. And I think you're right. I think the way Dallas played in the second half, the way things went, I think it worked out the way it's supposed to. Now, you look, the thing that makes me sad, however, is how bad this game was officiated. Not just the one call.
It was horribly officiated.
And it was both ways. It was both ways. It was, dude, there were two plays almost in a row where Jeremy Parnell had to pick up his helmet off the ground because the opposing defender had knocked it off. That's hands to the face. Oh, by the way, never called. There was the holding on Ndamukong Suh on the big fourth down play. I was screaming at my TV, holding, there's the hold. I could show you on TV where it was. You know, I'm screaming at home that I see it before the play is ever made. Now, granted, the one thing I couldn't see on that play is the fact that Witten was also being held.
That was the play before. That was the play before on the 3rd and 10 play that Jason Witten was held. That would have been an automatic first down. Now, here's the thing, Mr. Bowers. NFL, Dean Blandino, go suck a nut. I don't know if I can say that.
What kind of nut? A pine nut?
Yeah, a pine nut.
Go suck a pine nut until you choke to death. Because it is absolutely despicable the way that the league has let the last 72 hours play out, from the way that they handled the call on the field to the way that they came out and said, you know, there were four different penalties that could have been called on the play, and maybe a few he would have liked, but it was okay. And even then, I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. And then to come out and say, but, on that 4th and 6th play, man, there was holding, and I'm sorry, Detroit. What freaking purpose does that serve? Other than fire up a fan base, it just serves no purpose. And then a day later
I got to stop you there.
Feldman, I got to stop you because
you're not accurate.
A day later, they come out and announce the 7 other penalties that should have gone for the Cowboys and against the Lions. It's horrible. Absolutely botched. The NFL should be ashamed of themselves.
Feldman, go.
Okay, first and foremost, you're absolutely right with all of your viciousness and nut-sucking and all of that. I agree. However, the reason that they came out and addressed it is because the Lions sent in tape. The league had to address it.
Yeah.
Once the Lions send in tape with a claim, it has to be addressed. It's like that stupid thing where if you get 100,000 signatures, President Obama has to, like, try and get Jerry Jones to stop being the...
It's literally
that stupid.
Yeah.
Obama spoke on this too, by the way.
Yes, the NFL had to come out and respond. Now, did they handle it horribly? Yes. One more thing, any Detroit fan wants to go complain, you can suck enough too. I give you the Chicago Cubs losing the Steve Bartman game and losing the series from something that wasn't on the field. And you know what? They didn't cause the Cubs to miss the playoffs.
Yeah.
Alex Gonzalez missing a ground ball between his legs did. You drop passes. You make bad plays.
Right.
You fumble the ball. You miss tackles.
Right.
That doesn't mean that one play altered the entire landscape of the game, because I'm telling you, if they'd have called for it, if they'd have called holding on that, we don't know that Matt Stafford doesn't throw an interception the next play. We don't know.
Right.
Is it a penalty? Yep. Yes. Should it have been called? Yes. Was it? No. Move on.
Yeah, and I mean, you have old-time Cowboy fans who still say that, you know, Jerry Kramer was offsides and the Ice Bowl the play.
Yes, he was.
He was. Right?
And, I mean, and thank you. You still have people saying that, 50 years later?
Dion,
so,
Deion Sanders ripped down Michael Irvin in the 95 NFC Championship game on when that thing was close and a pass interference that wasn't called. I mean, it happens. But you know what?
Right.
Hey, but you know what, Mr. Bowers? You know what you do? You don't go out and dress for 80-degree weather in the ice bowl, for one, as I'm listening to the stories today. And, my God, how underprepared the Cowboys were for that. Number two, though, you don't fall down by 20-plus points in the NFC Championship game. There's just so many things. But let me say this, and to Mr. Feltman, your point, you're exactly right. The league does have to address it. But you don't address it in pieces. You wait until all the information is there and you put out a single report that says, here's the officiating report for the game. And the NFL has to look at this, and they have to admit that then they botched this thing from start to finish, although they won't, because Mr. Bowers, you know who's running the thing at the top, Mr. Inadequate, Mr. Freaking Roger Goodell, and Dean Blandino, who, you know what, I'm willing to forget, you know, say, hey, it's a bad judgment call to go on the party bus and everything, but you couple it with this freaking inept. You got a bunch of morons running this league, and it'll be amazing if in 10 years this thing is still somehow in the freaking black.
And that's exactly what I said to you guys last week, which was the last show we had, which was the only thing that's going to kill the NFL is the NFL. And, you know, you're telling me, Mr. Kopening, that the league should sit down and do their research and review all the tapes and then come up with a decision? No.
Oh,
no.
My God, imagine.
No, sir. That is not how we play football here. No, sir.
But,
all
hey,
right. Well,
again. Listen, I just want to, again, I do want to say this. I really do feel for the Detroit Lions fans. I do not blame them for feeling that they got jobbed. What really upsets me is that the league feeds into that. And we're not talking here on Wednesday about this great matchup that's coming in Green Bay. We feel we need to spend 20 minutes talking about the dumb, stupid officiating, and that is atrocious.
And that's the thing about – for me, you know, after the game, of course, Mr. Kopening, you were a bit elated, as I could see. And you said, oh, man, what a great game. And I said, no, it wasn't. It was terrible. It was a terrible game. Now, whether your team won or lost or whatever, it was a terrible game because of all of these inconsistencies. Because, to me, it wasn't pure. It was such crap, and you had to fight through so much junk to get there. Now, in the end, the results are what they are. And you move on, and that's what we're going to do here. But to me, where my sadness lied.
Dude, I almost hit it. I almost hit the music.
Oh man, sorry about that, brother. So yeah, it's all good. Well, that is what we're going to do here. Let's move on. Let's talk about some of the other games and look ahead to next week's matchups here on the Sports Narrative Radio Show. Now you can hit the music.
I did.
You're awesome.
I am.
As a child, you would wait and watch from far away. But you always knew that you'd be the one to work while they all play.
Yes. Little Warriors there, as the rest of the NFL Warriors did play on last weekend. And we will run through those matchups. Apparently, yes, sir.
I saw parts of another game.
Did you?
No.
Apparently, you were one of the few. As the ratings were like, all the other games were like 25, 28 million. I mean, still, it's the NFL, but, you know. And then the Cowboy game's like 42 million. Like, just
America's
lapping
team,
the field.
Baby. America's team.
America. All right. Well, speaking America. Of America, we did start up. The 3 o'clock Saturday game was the below 500 Carolina Panthers against the quarterbackless Arizona Cardinals. So that was a riveting matchup.
Can I go on the record with something real quick, gentlemen?
Sure.
Just real quick prediction. I'll beer bet this, but my bet is that this Sunday noon kickoff will be the highest rated NFL game non Super Bowl in league history. I'm a beer bet that anyone wants to go against me.
League history.
It non-Super Bowl, highest-rated game.
And league
think
history.
Think about it. Cowboys-Packers. I can't think of another matchup.
noon kick, I'll take that bet.
All right.
I would bet that thing with a 10-foot pole, baby. After the, you got to think, after the Cowboys snuck through that game, every Cowboy hitter is going to be watching the Packers try to trounce them.
That's true.
And every damn Cowboys fan is going to be watching with that belief that they're going to be able to go into Lambeau and win the game.
That is going to be the highest game ever. Only one problem.
Jesus
with that.
Will have all 12 big screens on his team.
I'll let you decide which team that is.
Is that noon?
What's the problem, Mr. Bowers?
10 a.m. in Los Angeles.
Yep.
Nobody cares.
No one watches football in Los Angeles.
Nobody goes to church in Los Angeles.
Good point.
The Scientologists. They have to get
all
rid
right,
of the dweezels or whatever.
Apparently the Cardinals could have used some Scientologists because they didn't have anything remotely resembling an offense. As they lose 27-16, Ryan Lindley with a big 82 yards passing on the day.
I got to ask you a question, Mr. Bowers. Are you telling me that getting somebody that retired last year off of the bench, off of the ground, wouldn't have been better than Lindley out there?
They tried. I would be willing to bet they made every phone call they could. Before
there was a rumor they went after Kurt Warner.
Yeah, so here's the thing. It's not just about getting off the guy. I mean, you think a call wasn't made to Brett Favre? Dude, I guarantee you it was.
Yeah.
Vinny Testaverde was waiting by his phone. Come on, guys.
Please. Yeah, exactly. I guarantee you some phone calls were made because you have to remember, going into last week, the Cardinals said on Monday, okay, we're going to bench Ryan Lindley. We're going to go with this Logan Thomas kid, fifth-round pick out of Virginia Tech, big strapping kid. We're going to get him ready. One practice in, and they go, yeah, that guy sucks. We got to go back to Ryan Lindley. At least he's functional. So one practice. Yeah, that's why you should have been a tight end, as the draft narrative scouting guide told you so. All right.
One quick thing, Mr. Bowers.
Yes.
If you want to look at this, just again, one of the things I like to look at in situations like this is just the look in a quarterback's face. Look at the great image, the first shot of Cam Newton as he's walking up to the line, about to snap the ball for the first time in the game, and the camera's zoomed in on him, and he closes his eyes, and he takes a deep breath, and he opens them up, and he's like, all right, let's go. And then you go and you look at Ryan Lindley in his first possession, and his eyes are darting around the room, around the field. He's just like, oh, my God, what's going on? Oh, who's going to hit me coming from nowhere? He totally did not belong on that field.
There's a yellow stain going down his white pants. Yeah, I'm with you.
He's not, no brown stains, no Miami.
I think it
on
was,
the field.
It was, yeah, so rough game for them. Hey, the Carolina Panthers are back to 500 at 8-8-1.
Yay.
And they get to go to Seattle. So good luck with that.
actually, that game, if I may, go look up, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, go look up Carolina against Seattle the last couple times they've played. They've lost all three or four games, but it was by a combined score of 12 or 15.
Well,
like Carolina can play Seattle tough.
This may be a tough game because one of the things Carolina has been doing well in the last few weeks is stopping the run. And we've seen when Seattle can't run the ball, man, that offense goes real stagnant. Now, I think the Carolina secondary is terrible, and they'll get torched. However, it could be a little more interesting. I think it'll be, I don't think it's going to be a blowout, but I also don't think Carolina has a chance in hell of winning. So,
Big injury, actually, as star Lutulalele broke his foot. And he is out for the Panthers,
yes.
Big defensive stud for them. So,
Lotulele, yes. The late game on Saturday was Baltimore.
Is he dating? Is he dating? What's his name now? Is that the?
No, that's not.
Yes, if he's gay. That's racist.
No, maybe he's faking it.
Maybe he's catfishing.
Being gay?
Yeah.
How do you fake being gay?
What's going on?
I don't know.
I can't remember.
Easy. Okay, Mick. speaking of faking it, the Steelers had been faking it for some time, and they finally got found out as the Ravens win 30-17. No Le'Veon Bell. The Steelers' offense is pretty putrid most of the game. And I got to say, Baltimore is one of those teams. They've got a hell of a pass rush. That secondary, at one point, they had guys from Home Depot starting in it, and now all of a sudden they're starting to get some guys
That'd
back,
cool.
sort of. No, it's fine in Baltimore. It's fine.
Okay.
So, yes, Baltimore's a team that could be scary, and I think they could give the Patriots a lot of problems just because the things – it's about matchups, and the things that they do well, which is rushing the passer, you know, on defense – is the one thing the Patriots have had troubles with this year. So,
defending the pass.
And Joe Flacco knows that defense. He knows he's played them enough times. I agree with you. I think New England's going to have a hell of a game.
Yeah, I think it could be. That could be an interesting matchup. And that, of course, is the early game on Saturday, 3 p.m. Baltimore at New England. All right, the other Sunday game, which was very, very hard to watch. The Bengals played the Colts. The Colts win 26-10.
That's the game I saw.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry, Mick.
No. I realized something, though, and I have a question. Since the Colts don't seem to know how to catch a football, how did they make it to the playoffs?
They did lead the league in drops, oh, by the way. However, if you saw the Andrew Luck roll out as he's about to cross the line of scrimmage, throw a pass as people are tripping him, a perfect strike to Dante Moncrief over two defenders, absolutely hits him in stride. You see that play and you go, he's pretty good.
Hey, that play in his third year in the NFL, but that play is going to be in his Hall of Fame. Seriously, that was that big of a play.
Oh.
That's going to be an Andrew Luck Hall of Fame reel, man. I mean, he is a freak.
Yeah, it was ridiculously good.
And he has to be a freak. I mean, that football has to be coming out like 100 miles an hour. Because I mean, it hits people in the chest, it bounces off their hands. I mean, I actually saw a guy do the clap thing. You know, like they slap their hands together and like clap because the ball is not there anymore because it's punching them in the face. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
Clearly, it's all Andrew Luck's
fault. It is. No, but here, check this out. A lot of people I've been hearing, Colin Cowherd and a couple other people, are starting to say they see a lot more Brett Favre than Andrew Luck than Peyton Manning. Everybody always compared Peyton Manning because it's Indianapolis.
Right.
Brett Favre had a problem with this when he was young in his career. I don't know how much you guys followed him early on. They throw every ball at 300 miles an hour.
Yep.
And it's after about 4 or 5 years, they start to realize, maybe I don't throw this at, you know, if I throw it at 75% speed, it still gets there and my guys can catch it. So I think you'll see that start to get a little better. Having said that, somebody needs to get T.Y. Elton to stick him because that's ridiculous.
Yeah, agreed. But one of the things, I remember what they said they used to say about Elway is he would throw it as hard as he possibly could all the time, and there would be guys on the Broncos team that would have like X marks on their chest from practice when they didn't have their pads on because the ball was hitting them and they were like, "Ow!" and they just kept dropping it. By the way, that's also one of the things you see out of Jameis Winston a little bit, which is why Florida State was terrible at drops this year. So,
and
more on that.
So mark it down. Jeff Bowers has just said Jameis Winston is next John Elway.
John Elway, Andrew Luck, and Brett Favre combined. That's what I heard.
Only if he goes to the Jets. If he goes anywhere else, he's dead to me. All right.
He's your next Geno Smith?
Exactly. He's my next Geno Smith. Thank you, Mick. Thanks
You're
for
welcome.
Kicking me right in the Jets' testicles. By the way, that is a late game on Sunday, the Indy at Denver, the 3 p.m. game. That's going to be an interesting match.
I want to ask you a question about that because what I see here, I see a lot of what we saw against Cincinnati. I think Indianapolis has the best quarterback. Denver has the best players. Is Andrew Luck enough to overcome Denver's better players?
No.
I don't think he's going to be.
No. Well, I think Luck is very good. I think the Broncos, I mean, really it's been their defense and their running game that's led them quite a bit down the stretch. And I think those are the things that are going to carry them through this game. Now, do I think the Broncos are going to the Super Bowl? Absolutely not. However, if you do get the upset of Baltimore, then maybe, you know, maybe they have a shot. But, man, I mean, the way Peyton's been throwing it, it's really been rough. That offense has been very sporadic at times. It reminds me a little bit of, like, the Lions, where they've got a good defense and a good running game, but the offense just comes and goes in waves, and you never know. So,
well, they don't have a consistent running game. And Peyton Manning somehow has acquired my arm. I didn't get his. But you think this is Manning's last season?
No, I think he'll go one more go. I think
really?
I really do. I think they're going to make one more big run at it. I think they've got a lot of veteran players on that team that they signed last year. I think they've got one more year before the salary cap really catches them. I think he'll give it one more shot if they don't win it. Now, if he wins it, maybe he rides off to the sunset. But I think he's got one more year in him. So,
interesting. All right, good.
And I think you're going to see something, too, where he and Brady will go out at the same time.
That would be kind of cute. I think they should go off together, holding hands.
Like as a couple?
Kind of like at the end of Shane. You know, they just ride off and show them if they're going to go gay or die. You know, it could go either
Thelma
way.
Louise.
Yeah.
Thelma and Louise, yeah. Man. Just drive up a cliff.
All right. Well, speaking of driving off a cliff, quick notes here. It looks as though the Rams owner does want to move the Rams to L.A., as you heard here on this show almost 9 months ago. As predicted. Once again, another prediction I absolutely nailed. It's amazing how that works.
Dean going to L.A. Way to call that one, jackass.
Hey, dude, I seriously had people on Twitter saying, you don't know what you're talking about. They're not moving at all. What do you know about anything? I mean, cussing me out, you know, obviously gave me the clean version. And I said, yeah, well, it's happening, so sorry.
They haven't moved yet, sir.
All right, we'll see. Just like Jim Harbaugh. Oh, yeah, you hadn't taken the job yet. Okay. I said he was going to go to Michigan before the season started.
He could always renege and go to Oakland.
Easy. Easy.
Wow.
That's a common term.
Yeah.
It doesn't make
sense.
Right? Your other reference makes no sense that you're reaching for.
Sir. All right. The Dolphins hire former Jets GM Mike Tannenbaum to ruin their franchise, so good luck with that. Hopefully they sign Mark Sanchez. That would be the best thing that could happen to me.
Who did that?
Dolphins. Boyd's Dolphins. The Eagles managed to keep Chip, and they give him, like, full personnel control. So the job of standing on the sideline and being, you know, holding a clipboard that pretends like you know something about personnel is open in the Eagles front office, if you want that gig.
I'll take it.
Yeah, I totally would. And more coaches out there, Dan Quinn, the Seattle defensive coordinator. Got to say, after seeing what the guy down in Jacksonville, Gus Bradley, has done as a former Seattle defensive coordinator, I don't know how I feel about Dan Quinn. Todd Bowles, the Arizona D coordinator, that's my first choice for the Jets. Frank Reich, the former Bills quarterback, who is now an offensive coordinator for San Diego. Gary Kubiak, please God no. And a few other coaches are out there. Brian Schottenheimer, the offensive coordinator for St. Louis, is now taking the offensive coordinator job at Georgia because people realize he's terrible. And finally, the Redskins hire some drunk guy to run their front office, too. So that's awesome. And
you
weren't supposed
to tell anyone
awesome.
About my new job.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry, bud. What else is awesome is the college football playoff championships. We have two here in North Texas coming up this weekend, and we will talk about that right now.
Feel it in the morning. Still here in the morning.
Ah, yeah.